This is Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. U.S. military officials asked the Turkish government today for permission to locate an airbase less than a mile from the Iraqi border in Habur, Turkey. The proposed airbase would be in addition to the existing U.S. military base in Incirlik, Turkey. It's from Incirlik that U.S. planes routinely enforce the no-fly zones over Iraq, conducting bombing raids on average three times a week. Tomorrow, Masoud Barzani, leader of the armed Iraqi Kurdish Democratic Party, one of the two Kurdish armies in northern Iraq, heads to Ankara. Barzani is scheduled to engage in a rare meeting with the Turkish officials ahead of a meeting in northern Iraq next week of Iraqi opposition figures organized by the Bush administration. Peace Watch correspondent Aaron Glantz reports from the Turkish capital of Ankara.
Safin Dizay is a leader of the armed Kurdish group, the KDP, which together with the Kurdish PUK effectively governs a large part of northern Iraq, independent of Saddam Hussein. Dizay disputes published reports indicating American and Turkish troops have been entering northern Iraq to prepare for an invasion of the bulk of Iraq, which is still controlled by Saddam Hussein. He says his group wants to avoid a war, but he says the top priority of the KDP and other armed Kurdish groups is to topple Saddam Hussein. And he says if that means war, so be it.
We have seen enough destruction in our country. Only in less than 18 months, in late 80s, 182,000 people were rounded up and they have disappeared in the so-called Anfal campaign. Almost 4,500 villages were destroyed. The chemical attack of Halabja in 1988 with a massacre of 5,000 people. So we cannot really accept lessons on morality about the nature of the regime. We have paid too high a price.
The KDP and PUK are two of a half dozen opposition groups who will be meeting in Kurdish-held territory next week to hammer out what they hope will be a post-Saddam government for Iraq. At the table is a wide cross-section including Islamic fundamentalists, Iran-based Shiite groups, the CIA-backed Iraqi National Congress, and an organization dedicated to restoring Iraq's long-deposed king to his throne. The meeting is organized by the Bush administration as part of its preparations for war. Levent Korkut is director of Amnesty International's office in the Turkish capital, Ankara. He says Amnesty opposes the war, but supports President Bush's efforts to avoid chaos afterward.
The dialogue building each time is good. If dialogue happens, it is a good thing, of course. But whether it works or not, we don't know. We will see. But Amnesty all the time promotes dialogue.
But there's at least one important group that's not at the table: Iraq's Sunni Muslims, which make up a majority of the country's population. These people reside primarily in the part of Iraq that is still controlled by Saddam and have not been invited to Washington-sponsored dialogues. That's a bad sign, says Ahmet Faruk Unsal, a member of the Turkish parliament from the country's ruling Islamic AK Party. Unsal is the only member of the Islamic Party to serve on Amnesty's board of directors. He is especially worried about published reports indicating the U.S. could launch a military occupation of Iraq that would last at least 18 months. He says such an occupation would start a rash of suicide attacks in Turkey, Syria, Lebanon, Israel, and Iran, and destabilize the region.
They blame me that this problem will extend the war. It will not stop the conflict. It will be the beginning of the big war. I want to believe, I believe actually the wisdom of American people, but I hope the people who are governing America will be clever enough not to bring their soldiers.
Engin Ural is Secretary General of the Environment Foundation of Turkey. He thinks the Bush administration should think twice before it designs a future government for Iraq. He recalls when the U.S. government tried to do something similar in the 1960s.
Americans should remember Vietnam. To believe that after Saddam Hussein, everything will be quiet, smoothly. No, I don't think so.
And Levent Korkut of Amnesty International notes any U.S. occupying army would have an additional challenge to protect the human rights of supporters of Saddam Hussein.
Of course, it is a big problem. It will be a big problem. Nobody talks about it right now. But human rights are rights of all people, including killers, including totalitarian regime supporters. And after the war, it may be a problem. And some people who support Saddam may fled the country, and they may be refugees. Of course, they must be protected.
Iraqi opposition groups supported by the Bush administration will be meeting next week, January 15th, in Erbil, in northern Iraq. For Pacifica's Peace Watch, I'm Aaron Glantz in the Turkish capital, Ankara.
How do Americans as a whole feel about the Bush administration's plans to launch another war in the Middle East? Are people talking to each other? And are the politicians listening? Independent radio producer Scott Carrier recently spent 3 weeks driving 8,000 miles across the country, asking the people he met these very questions. And he presents this audio montage of his journey.
October 17th, 2 p.m. In America, we used to say, "I may not believe what you believe, but I will die defending your right to express it." We could boil the idea of our country down to that one sentence, and it was a beautiful thing. I haven't heard that sentence in a long time, and I'm wondering if it was ever true. I'm packing up, getting ready to drive across the country, interviewing people about the State of the Union, and my friend Penny comes by to say goodbye. She's also leaving town, but to work as a janitor for a year at McMurdo Station, Antarctica. I ask her why, and she says because she was there once before as a tourist and fell in love with a whale.
It's going to be okay.
All right. So do you think things are different now? Do you think things have changed in the past year?
Well, I mean, obviously they've changed to a certain extent, but I don't think they've changed as much as people say that they've changed. They say, you hear people saying often that, you know, we'll never be the same after September 11th and we'll never be the same, but we're the same. Look outside. Everybody's doing the same thing. Nobody's changed their habits.
Did you have any faith in America before last year? Or were you didn't have any faith before and it's no different now?
Yeah, I think...
Okay, so tell me about that. Why don't you have faith in America and the American system?
Well, it doesn't seem to be working. We're run by 225 rich people. You know, 225 rich people make our decisions for us, essentially. They're the people that have the money. They're the people that can lobby. They're the people that can, you know, dazzle our senators and our congressmen and our president. And I believe my voice, unless I shove it down their throats, it's not really heard. No matter how many times I call the White House to tell them I'm against things.
Why is it only 225?
Because there's a small quantity of people who are really, really rich. I've narrowed it down to 225.
October 20th, 7 p.m., Pinedale, Wyoming, John Perry Barlow.
I think that on the morning of October 10th, when the United States Senate voted to extend relatively undefined war powers to President Bush, that marked the end of the American Republic and the beginning of the American Empire. We have now given the presidency, the executive branch, the kinds of authority that were usually vested in kings.
Barlow is known for being a former lyricist for the Grateful Dead and a visionary philosopher in the cyber world. But he's also a former cattle rancher and CIA consultant who calls Dick Cheney a friend.
And I'm not at all persuaded that the massacre on September 11th had much of anything to do with the government in Iraq. But this is being completely lost. And in our desire to reach out and thrash somebody, something, having failed to make a clear and decisive victory against lowercase nouns like terror and evil, we are now trying to attack a nation state. And I don't think it's any particular coincidence that that nation state has the second largest oil reserves in the world. I can't imagine that my fellow Americans are willing to go out and kill innocent people and essentially enslave and oppress other folks to destroy their governments and occupy their country just so that we can go on driving SUVs. I mean, I cannot believe that we are that venal and short-sighted and mean. We've reached a terrible turn because we may be the most powerful country on the planet, but I don't really think that we are capable of taking on the whole world, certainly not if the whole world has the moral upper hand. I'm revolted. I'm disgusted with us. I'm ashamed of us. I have never felt so futile in my life or powerless. I feel like my voice makes no difference. And there's nothing I can do to vouchsafe a civilized future for my descendants.
Tuesday, 10 a.m., Crescent Valley, Nevada, on the Western Shoshone Reservation. Elder Carrie Dan.
The Arab people are something like the indigenous people here in the United States. The strong goes over and build homes on their land and take it by, probably as they say in the United States, by gradual encroachment. I know how it feels that, you know, to have your land taken by just because somebody builds a house over here and say, you know, we've taken over your land. That's basically the same thing that's happening in Israel. And I think the Israeli people or the Jewish people should return those lands to the Arabs. And if this war with Iraq starts, I think the United States is just going to have more problems with more Arabs in the different areas because there's no way you can stop terrorism. You may put all your armies and things and, you know, go out and kill innocent men, women, and children, but you're not going to stop terrorism. Because terrorism starts from the minds of men and women. It's a psychological warfare that's being conducted because that is the only way they can strike at a mighty power. And they put fear into the mighty power. And I don't think it's going to be solved with arms.
Tuesday, noon, near Battle Mountain. A woman is hitchhiking with two dogs. She has blue eyes and is wearing brightly colored rags in tatters. Rhodey, 60 years old. She has Alzheimer's and arthritis and works on a ranch taking care of sheep.
The ones I take care of are between 75 and 100 sheep and goats together. And they're kept in a pen, and the sheep herder lets them out. And you have to stay with them. Walk around with them and put them back in before dark.
Well, so have you been following the news at all? Are you aware that the United States might be going to war in Iraq?
No.
You hadn't heard that?
No. I don't read the newspapers or watch TV.
What about the attack on New York and Washington last year, September 11th? You must have heard about that.
I didn't hear about it.
Oh, come on. Really?
Really.
You don't know what happened?
I didn't hear. I don't watch TV or read the newspapers ever. I'm always outside. I'm mostly always traveling or camping outdoors. And I don't ever read the newspaper. I never watch TV. And actually, I didn't hear about it.
Two planes flew into the World Trade Center towers in New York City, and one flew into the Pentagon. Another one crashed in Pennsylvania. You didn't hear about that?
No.
Really?
No, I didn't.
Huh. And then the United States went to war in Afghanistan.
I hadn't heard. Huh. I'm not materialistic. I'm a homeless person, and I love the outdoors.
Like
I love the desert.
What do you like about the desert?
I like the sand and the sage bushes, the shrubberies, the wildlife. The deserts are like my home. The deserts are beautiful to me.
Saturday morning, Bristlecone Pine Forest in the White Mountains near Bishop, California. Elevation 10,000 feet. Lupe Portis from Anaheim has a rifle and a fluorescent yellow vest. Have you seen any deer yet?
None.
How many days have you?
I've been here since Wednesday, and the opening day was Saturday, but I haven't seen no deer.
Huh. You seem like you still have fun, even if you don't get a deer.
No, you just come down here and have fun and say, you know, if you don't get your kill, your deer, as long as the Lord takes you home safe, that's the main thing. When I come down here hunting, I see these my friends and other people that I don't know having a great time. What country can you go and do the same? You cannot even go to Canada and do the same and hunt like we do. You know, things will happen. There'll be always somebody hating the United States. You know, that's why we have, you know, the CIA, the FBI. We have so many people, so many agencies that are, you know, protecting us. So I feel very comfortable, you know.
Really, you feel comfortable with the FBI and the CIA protecting you?
Oh, yes. I mean, especially the, you know, the armed forces. Those are the guys that do everything for us, you know. Because freedom is, believe me, I die for freedom.
Why do you say that?
Because I love my country.
Sunday, 3 p.m., Grandview Point, south rim of the Grand Canyon. Mike from Lafayette, Louisiana, is coming up out of the canyon after going down about halfway, 2,600 vertical feet.
It is truly one of the best things I've ever done. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Just the beauty. It's so quiet out there that it's scary quiet.
He's on vacation with his wife. She's already back at the car waiting. He's talking about how the country went to hell long before 9/11.
Everybody wants something from the government. Nobody wants to do things on their own anymore. Everybody wants a handout. So as it gets little by little by little by little, you are going to have a nation of people that are dependent on the government versus those that are independent and control their own lives.
Well, what about the war on terrorism? You haven't said anything about that. Is that of no concern to you? Or?
I think, and another example of how the government's gotten out of control is how we can't racially profile. Well, I don't think there's been any terrorism with any white Americans. They're all Arabs. So I say you pull all Arabs out of line at the airport and you search them. You don't have to search the white guys and the grannies and the nuns and the guys with plates in their hips. Those people do not create terrorism.
So what do you think about the invading Iraq? You think we should do that?
I'm a big supporter of Bush. To hell with the Europeans. I mean, who cares what they want? To heck with all of them. Disband the Security Council. Disband the whole darn thing. I'm not going to let puppet people from regimes in Africa and Asia and South America have no business telling us what we can do and what we can't do. We pick our battles. I mean, if nobody's picking on us, we have no business meddling in their affairs.
But Iraq really hasn't. How's Iraq picked on us?
That's what I'm saying. They haven't yet. But the first time they do something, we just blow them off the face of the earth. You just have to keep plugging away. Guess it's like the Israeli philosophy. Just every time you pick on me, I'm going to blow up a bunch of yours. Now, you know, it's going to escalate, and I don't know where it ends. But if somebody picks on us, we blow them off the face of the earth. And that's going to irritate other people. But hopefully after you do that two or three times, the other folks are going to get the message and maybe quiet it down a bit.
Wednesday, lunchtime. Trucker's Lounge in the Ozarks of Arkansas. Howard Hickson of Springfield, Missouri, a big man with a full beard, hands built for crushing things, studied history in college.
If somebody comes in and wants to negotiate with you and he's setting car bombs off, no. But you don't go in to a Palestinian neighborhood indiscriminately, just start knocking buildings down, shooting the works up. I mean, how many times can somebody take a gun butt to the mouth before they decide you aren't worth a shit, that they're going to come after you? You know, you get right down to it, it really isn't religion. It's somebody who's trying to use religion to justify out-and-out murder. If they did not have the religious backing that they claim they have and the support and everything, most of these people would be branded out-and-out criminals. We've had the same thing with the Christian religion. You know, going back to the Crusades, take the Irish Catholic conflict, or go to Germany and use this Jewish extermination. I come from a country, you remember the word, the covenant, and the sword from back in the late 70s, early 80s when they had the chase that shot all the cops and everything else. They're radical white supremacist religion organization. Everybody was ordained preachers in the whole nine yards. They had these people rob banks, blow things up. God was in their corner. They had a right to take it because God told them to. This person opposed him, therefore he must be the devil and strike him down. The M16 was their sword. I knew where the compound was, and they were real, real radical.
1 a.m., a new travel plaza on the Ohio Turnpike. The only customer is sitting at a table going through a bunch of receipts. A trucker, Michael from Baton Rouge.
They say divided we fall, together we stand, we divided. America is divided.
Okay, so give me a specific example.
Okay, here I go. This is me and my Cadillac going down the street on the interstate. I'm sitting on 20s in a 1999 Cadillac sedan DeVille, all blue with tinted windows with the windows down so that you can't see in there. Sitting on 20s, all chrome.
What do you mean sitting on 20s? What's
that mean? 20-inch rims, the spoke rims that, you know, most people buying now. And I'm on the interstate. And I'm on cruise control behind an old white couple. And right there in Louisiana on I-12. But all of a sudden, we pass a state trooper, and the state trooper get behind me and pull me over. When I asked him what's the, you know, what he pulled me over for, he came up tell me a reason. And when he asked to search my car, I told him, yeah. He towed my car up. What he towed my car for? He took my back seats out, took my radio, he took all that out. Talking about he went to bouncing extra rim. I had an extra rim. He went to bouncing my tires as though he looking for drugs. And he had to let me go. But, I mean, it's some effect. Racism, you know what I'm saying? Harassment. It's a war on my neighborhood. It's a war on the... When I say my people, I'm talking about people that ain't so fortunate, that ain't so rich, that ain't got it going. You know, we got to go through struggle, daily struggle. Them my peoples. The peoples that got to struggle. Them my peoples. Them my peoples, yeah.
Friday, in the wheat field at Gettysburg National Park, inside the pickup truck of retired L.A. policeman Ed Epperson and his wife, Stephanie, who was the stunt woman for Amanda Blake in Gunsmoke.
We're retired now, and we decided that in our retirement we'd drive around and look at some of our national monuments and take a look at our country, you know. Everyone wants to see the Grand Canyon. We've seen that, and we decided to look at some of the battlefields and some of the things that that Americans long before us did that made our way of life so good today. Think about it. All the way back to the Manifest Destiny, the purchase of the Louisiana Purchase, and all of these things that happened so many years ago give us such a great land to farm, to make a living, to try to excel, education. We've got it all here. This is the little jewel of the world. This is what mankind really, really has strived to have. And we've got it, and so many people today don't realize how much we've got here. Right now, we are the power of the world. And I think our president has a responsibility to maintain that power so that it doesn't become... Like, you take the power you have, you use it properly. We don't start wars, but we're kind of policing our oceans, and we're protecting our commerce. We're protecting our citizens, you know. This whole country is based on international trade. You take that out of the picture, and God, we'll starve to death. We don't make shoes anymore. We don't produce anything here anymore. We're strictly dependent on world trade. So those sea lanes and those tankers that haul those big boxes back and forth, our sea power better be out there to protect it. And we better keep a close eye on these third world nations with idiots like Saddam Hussein and these guys. We pay big bucks for that stuff. You've been to the oil pumps recently. You're paying for it. We're not stealing it from them. We're doing business with them. That's called international trade. That's fine. That's healthy for everybody. Now, how the Arabs hold all this wealth that they get and what they do with it, that's their problem. You know, and I notice we haven't been interfering with that, which is good. That's their problem. And if they decide to keep their people down and dumb and, you know, in the desert and making their empires bigger and their military bigger, which they do, that's their business. But when it becomes a threat to the free world with atomic weapons and biological weapons and so forth, yeah, we better take a hard look at it. We have an absolute, not a right, but we have an obligation to do that. These bandits are a threat to our existence.
Sunday afternoon, Brooklyn Heights, just across the East River, looking back at Lower Manhattan. Garrett McConnell lives just a few blocks away.
I really thought they had dropped an atom bomb on the city. It was so astronomically loud. I don't think anybody who wasn't there could imagine how devastating that was. And I think I was screaming before I even knew I was screaming, and then people were screaming around me on the rooftops. But you couldn't see your hands. So much smoke. You know, and for whatever reason, we got most of the smoke. I'm not really sure why. It's just the way the wind went. I remember this particular smell, and it was just so horrifying knowing that, you know, that smell wasn't just the asbestos or the steel or the papers. It was people. You know, it's their bones, it's their flesh, it's everything. And so once you realize that, it was like doubly horrifying, you know, to have the wind shift and to, you know, you're thinking you're getting over it and then the wind would shift and then you'd smell this particular smell and start crying. And, I mean, this happened through December, September, October, yeah, it's 4 months. I am really, truly opposed to what the president is doing right now. We're riding a very thin line between, like, a World War III with nuclear weapons. I mean, this is the biggest fear I have. And since I had it happen in my backyard, I really personally do not want to have a world where, you know, every week, like in Israel, somebody's blowing themselves up in New York, because that's where they're going to come. They are actually not going to come to Montana. They're not going to go to a small town in Iowa. You know, we are the world in terms of money, and we've made ourselves that way, and people hate us for it.
The basic notion of our founding fathers was that nobody really knew what was going on. Their solution was that everybody should say what they believed was going on, because the truth would eventually emerge through the argument. Is that how it really works? Do we keep talking to each other and eventually come to an understanding, or do we just yak and yak and then the world crashes down on us, like it was going to do anyway? Should we talk about this or not?
Independent radio producer Scott Carrier and his production entitled State of the Union. Thanks to Jay Allison, Chelsea Mers, and Transom.org for production help with that segment. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adel Hamad of KPFA, Chris Harlan, and Sam Silsby. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send us your feedback to peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Thank you for listening.